Come one, come all. This is Bat and Spider, episode 193. This week for the show, we watched, insert movie here.
White of the Eye.
We watched White of the Eye, Chuck. I meant to make him stop drinking his liquid to answer my question for me. Friend of the show, Art, says in his review, dozens of small, non-traditional choices give this such unique feel, making it 10 times more interesting than it should be.
Okay, all right, Art. Thank you for playing along at home.
He's such an expert, man. He's so good at this. He must have just logged this while we were pre-showing here, Chuck.
Yeah.
Art, thanks for watching with us.
A little pre-log.
You're the best. Print Hover watched it too. Wow. 5 stars by Print Hover. He was no match for her. Prince review.
Nice. I like that.
If anything is off tonight, Chuck, it's because I am trying a new set of cans in my ears and I am completely thrown off of my game. Everything is surreal to me right now.
I wonder, it's having your ears plugged up, I think, can change your perception of things, right?
Completely. Yeah. Yes. That
messes with your senses. But I do it every week. This is how I live. But it is weird. I get it. It is weird.
Now it's like, now I'm too loud and everything else sounds different. And my S's are like, I'm just so corny.
Sizzle.
I can't. All sizzle, no steak.
I gotta say, you picked another good one. I'm just gonna say that. I'm having one of those weeks where I feel not up to the task to the movie at hand. I'll admit that up front.
Okay. No, that's fine.
You know what I mean? I feel like I walked into calculus. I don't know what do you call a calculus class? I walked into a calculus class by accident and I'm 12 years old. You know?
And it's like you're a dream. So you're in the class now, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
At least for the one day. Yeah. I'm glad you admit that, Chuck, because that's me every week too. And this is no exception. I mean, you look at, the image for White of the Eye on Letterboxd and you just know David Keith is up to no good. Just look David Keith in life in general. And you know, we're not going to be able to talk about this movie.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I mean, the biggest curveball to start the whole thing was the Canon logo that came up.
Right?
Yeah.
Freaky.
Yeah.
We're going to be getting into the White of the Eye in a little bit. Before that, this is the time we chop it up. We chat it up. You probably skipped right to this portion using the chapters in your podcast app.
Because this is your favorite part of the show where we get personal. We talk about our lives. We let little slivers of truth out.
Sometimes you might learn a little something about us.
Yeah.
Sometimes you might learn a little something about our lives.
If you're building a psychological profile on us, this is probably, you're probably going to want to listen to this part.
Yep.
Get some insight.
So, out with it.
Well,
give the people what they want.
I had a whirlwind of a few days where I watched a billion movies, Dale.
Shit. Really?
I mean, I had to watch 2 movies for our reasons. For our show reasons.
/ Kofi, CC Kofi subscribers.
CC Kofi. Get on that Kofi. If this is not enough Canon films for you, you want to get into that Black Dungeon, all right? More Canon fun over there. But I watched three films, Dale. I watched The Beekeeper from this year, okay?
I watched The Beekeeper too.
Did you?
I saw your review, so I want to talk about
God.
That with you.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow. Look at us.
Yeah, look at us.
I also watched Lisa Frankenstein in the theaters.
Cool.
My lady friend took me out on a date to see that.
Chuck, I'm glad you got to go see that.
It was unexpected. Because I know we were trying to coordinate if we could see it and talk about it together, but it was one of those spur of the moment things.
Mm-hmm.
And then we watched Dune also.
Damn, dude. You what a productive weekend.
Yeah, you recently had finally watched as well. So yeah, a lot of boxes getting checked over here. But Beekeeper. Yeah. Okay, Dale. Beekeeper.
So Chuck, I don't know what to say about this beekeeper. Okay. This movie is so unhinged.
Yeah.
Mild spoilers for The Beekeeper. I'm sorry, but I have to get into it because I'm just like, I went to go see it with YouTube's Brian Rummel this past weekend. Mm-hmm. And I am just beside myself on what exactly, what we're supposed to think of our beekeeper who keeps bees. He is chaos, walking chaos. I understand what the beekeeper role is to keep the country afloat or whatever. It's
protecting the hive, yeah.
There's so many innocent dead bodies in his wake. I don't get what this guy, are we supposed to root for him? Are they just like so hard, like are their crotches just completely stiff for another John Wick that I do not get this movie.
Okay, so it had a few things before I saw it. I David Ayer directed this. I'm barring that Suicide Squad movie that I think got taken away from him. I've quite enjoyed his movies.
Okay.
He's kind of a right-wingy kind of I love cops and the military type director, which politically I doubt we would have anything in common, but I like his movies. I think he's good at action movies. So I had that. But it's also written by the guy who did Equilibrium. Now, I've never seen Equilibrium, Dale.
Wow.
But I know
some years ago.
It's like, it was like an infamous like video store kind of movie, right? Like,
yeah.
Which I got to get on that and see that finally. What's his name? Kurt Wimmer. What else did he do? He wrote Salt, Law Abiding Citizen, The Total Recall 2012 one, Expendables 4, The Thomas Crown Affair remake, Sphere. So yeah, the Point Break remake. I mean, you get an action movie remake, you're going to get this guy to write it.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, going to this, it's clear that this is like John Wick. Okay, just like the slasher movie we watched in the dungeon this week, it is John Wick fever is sweeping the nation. Every producer's like, we got to get our own John Wick. Kurt Wimmer's like, I got it.
Guess what?
Yeah. Secret organization of killers called the Beekeepers that the FBI and CIA don't even know about off the books, but they're there to keep things. I don't know what their job is, to keep the capitalism going. I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
But they're there. And our boy Statham, another plus in the plus column for me. I love Jason Statham.
No disrespect to Jason. He is like one of the last action stars. He's amazing. The guy is amazing.
And I think this movie I enjoyed the movie. A lot of flaws. But
it was the Hallmark movies of action movies. There was like the plot was so thin.
The whole beekeeper thing, like it was fine. It was, the setup was interesting. And I liked that his elderly neighbor got phishing scammed and lost all her money. And she shot herself in the head. I mean, big ramp up.
Huge ramp up.
She didn't even talk to her bank. She, be like, can this be fixed? No, she just made a decision right then and there.
Right? She's so embarrassed.
So embarrassed.
That was it. And you know what? We know Jason Statham. We know the beekeeper loved him because he said, thank you for taking care of me.
Oh my God.
So we already know this is like, she is like his puppy.
Yeah.
She is like his puppy.
Mm-hmm. Why did you notice when he walks out of her house after she's dead, he takes her the honey back that he brought over to give to her?
Yeah. It's like,
why? Why did he take it back? Was it just because he's like used to cleaning up his evidence?
Because
they made special care for us to see him take it back. Like it was going to mean something later.
And I do remember later in the movie, he does beat somebody over the head with a jar of honey, but he's got thousands of jars of honey. I don't know what he's doing with all this honey.
Yeah. Yeah, action's pretty good. There's, David Ayer, he can do the action. There's good action. These fucking FBI agents, this dialogue, Dale, I wanted to die. I mean, it was, but it was also so badly like Marvel dialogue stuff.
Yeah. It was.
That it did make me laugh because I was like, this is, I can't believe this is in here. Like, this is insane. Right. This dialogue is awful. Like, who is this for? Because it's like, I listened to Chapa Trap House's episode on this, and they're like, you know, their big thing was like, this is a movie for old people. Cause it's like you see an old person get scammed out of their money, and then this nice young man comes and kills everyone for them to protect the old people. Cause they don't understand computers, you know?
I mean, there was definitely like the geriatric like lobbyists definitely worked into this movie, like, because his whole tirade about how nobody's out looking out for them.
Exactly. Yeah. And the big politician. So it's crazy the way this movie goes, but anyway, there's a politician, without ruining it, that they get to, that it's amazing. She's like an amalgam of Trump and Hillary Clinton and Biden. It's incredible.
And yeah.
It just works. It really works well. Like, you know, again, for an old person watching this, it's like, yeah, of course, you know, you're going to cover all the bases. Like, the old person watching this is going to hate one of those politicians, and they're going to project that politician onto this character. It's very easy.
Yeah. Right.
I love that. But yeah, not enough B humor. I will say that.
Not enough.
I don't think anyone died by bees, was upset about.
Okay. Would you agree that there was enough attempted bee humor? Or not even that?
There was, but it felt like they dropped the bee humor halfway through the movie. Like at the end when he's done with his job and he gets his scuba gear on to swim away. I was like, he should have had like yellow stripes on the black scuba suit.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that
would make
little
sense.
Things like that, you know.
He should have said, time for me to buzz off.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. See,
how come he sounded so different in this? His accent was different in this movie, Chuck.
I feel like
they
cut him out of this movie. I felt like, it also felt like he was barely in this movie that he was starring in. Did you get that feeling that he was such a nondescript character? Like, he had no, other than the revenge motivation, like, we got really nothing. Like, John Wick, you know, they kill his puppy, and we get the whole, his wife dying of a mysterious illness. Like, we really feel for John Wick. Like, he's been through shit. He's one of us. But this guy is just like, okay, he's a super killer who worked for a secret agency, and he was neighbors with Felicia Rashad, and he's, you know, she fed him and he liked that.
He liked it. Yeah. While you were talking about that, I was kind of like assembling in my head, like, it wasn't his movie. It was just like, let's set the stage, and then he comes in for the action sequences, and then let's set more stage, and then he shows up for the action sequences. He's like Godzilla.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. Because there's no, like, we don't see him investigating or like following, you know, pulling the thread to figure out who all the bad guys are to go kill them. He just shows up.
Yeah. Yes.
And we
have
to listen to some shitty FBI horrible dialogue.
What a movie.
But yeah, it was a blast. I think everyone.
But it was fun.
It.
Yeah, like I'm with you. It was fun. It was like, it reminded me of The Transporter, because I've only seen Transporter on video. I don't know if it got a theatrical release. Maybe it did, but it was, you know, like quality wise, it was like The Transporter. Like, I used to adore The Transporter. Now I really like The Transporter, but it is not the best of movies. And this is like this would be my Transporter had I seen this at the right time.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping it's done well enough that we're privileged for a Beekeeper 2, and we get some yellow stripes on some of his outfits.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, for. No. Yeah. But you know, the my worry, Chuck,
yeah.
and then we got to move on, I think.
We really
my
do.
Worry is, you know, Chuck, yeah. this guy's face, he is, tell me he's not a domestic terrorist.
Wait, who?
Tell me the beekeeper. Tell me his face isn't all over TV. After these incidents.
Oh, yeah.
He is a domestic terrorist. He can't show his face. He can't live next to Felicia Rashad anymore. Next Felicia Rashad.
He's not in the beekeeper program anymore. So like they can just throw him to the wolves.
He's disavowed, you know? Yeah. But you know what? The second movie is going to be like, well, they recognize they need him back for one more because, you know, the previous beekeeper was a complete murderous hag, you know, like,
yeah,
she was unhinged. She was crazy.
Yeah. That was the other John Wicky thing. Like having a weird, another mid-level weird boss. Assassin trying to kill him. And I thought that it was going to be a lot more of that, of other beekeepers coming out of the woodwork to kill him, but I'm sure that'll be number two, something like that. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I saw Dune, Dale, just real quick. Saw Dune.
Okay.
I liked it. It's good.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's great. I think it's perfect time for you to see it. It's perfect time for us to see it because the next one's coming out. Hopefully.
I know.
I make a point to see it.
I keep telling Melissa's way. She's like head over heels. In love with this movie.
Oh, that's
and
great.
And I'm like, I keep saying, I was like, well, at least we don't have to wait 2.5 years like everybody else to see. You know, we're just waiting like 2 weeks.
I'm glad she liked it too. I'm glad you made a point to watch it. I thought it was a very good movie. 5 stars for me. I mean, it was a great movie. Lisa Frankenstein.
Oh, Lisa Frankenstein. Okay. No, I reserve the grace to change my mind, but in this moment, I had such a good time.
Mm.
And it might be colored because I had a kind of a bad day before. And this thing just sort of like swept over me. It gave me a new view. It wiped away anxiety that I had. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Good. So I'm thankful for that. But I genuinely had such a good time. I can see gripes that people would have with it, but it pulled off. I didn't know it was set in the 80s, first off, even though I watched the trailer like 3 times. I had no idea it was set in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just like a colorful art decoration, whatever, set decoration. But it's literally set in the late 80s. And I was like, oh no. Like at first I was like, oh crap, it's going to be like in your face 80s. And it is in your face 80s, but with Diablo Cody's writing, like everything's very exaggerated. It just kind of, it worked in a way that normally that kind of thing annoys the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And it did, even though it's like exaggerated in the 80s, it did feel genuine. Like it was like believable, like the Lisa's house that she lives in, like it felt like it was 1989 or whenever it was set. Everything felt really true, and all the cars and stuff and the hairstyles. And gosh, it's Frankenstein. So like, I mean, you got me hook, line and sinker that, you know, or halfway there with the Frankenstein stuff. It surprised me. It made me laugh. I laughed so much. I was next to this like middle-aged couple. Oh, I guess I'm middle-aged now, but they were older than me, you know, and you know how when you go in a theater, you kind of size up the crowd and you're like, sometimes you're like, what are you doing in here? Like, what are you, what's your interest story. In this type of movie? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But this lady next to me, she laughed more than me. She laughed at everything. She was having such a good time. And it was like,
wow.
I really wanted to, like, I would never, ever dare talk to a stranger in public, but
yeah, yeah.
I really wanted to, after the movie, I was like, I want to just like talk to her about the movie. Hey, what'd you think? You know?
Yeah. Right.
After you realize
she was experiencing such a good time.
Yeah. It made me
feel good.
Cause we were both laughing. You know, yeah. I had a few moments where I will confess I have a loud cackle laugh that comes out of me when I'm caught off guard. And it happened I think it happened to me 3 times during this movie.
Nice.
Where I probably filled the theater with a very loud laugh, you know, where I was distracting people. But some good lines in there. Some good lines. Anyway, I feel like I'm rambling about this one, but I liked it. And I think it's worth seeing. It's really fun. That's all I say. That's it.
Now I want to see it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, I'm not going to be like, you got to see it in the theater because it's not that type of movie, but.
Yeah. Good. Because that's.
I'm thankful it's, even though it was dropped in the Hollywood dead zone of January, February. It's.
Right.
We're burning time, Dale. We gotta get on to this.
We got about 10 minutes to talk about this movie, Chuck. We got about 10 minutes, 8 minutes.
I know. White of the Eye, 1987, directed by Donald Kamel. God, where to start?
Oh, shit. This guy directed Performance.
Okay, I got some questions for you, all right?
Okay.
Dale.
All right. Go. What is White of the Eye?
Joni and...
This is Mick Jagger's my movie Performance.
Joni and Mike in the 70s, they're leaving New York. They want to change their lives. They end up in Arizona because... Joni destroyed the A-track player. And luckily, they stumbled upon the greatest stereo fix-it shop in all of Arizona. Yeah. And this is where Joni meets Paul. And they decide to stay a few days. Mike is an unhinged character who looks like he's doing a lot of cocaine. And he's like, yeah, this place seems dangerous and weird. I'm going to stay here for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Before we move on to California. Anyway, very quickly, Joan and Paul, they're hooking up, right? They're melting each other. Okay.
They can't keep their hands off each other.
Cut to modern day. They're married. They got a daughter, cute little daughter. And he's like the area's Tucson's audiophile stereo installer to the stars. He can do this thing, Dale, where he hums and he can feel the sound vibrations in the room and he knows exactly where to put the speakers.
Horn-loaded tweeters there, 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 and there. And all the bass out this end. Of course, you have to have heavy-duty cables. That's what separates the men from the boys.
You know, they're living their life, but at the same time, there's someone offing women in the area. Brutal murders of women. Paul happens to have the same model tire on his sweet van. That the killer also seems to have. So the FBI is kind of sniffing around. The cops are his buddies. They really don't care. This movie is kind of an impressionistic painting of a life in a town, and a murder mystery that, kind of, it strung me along for quite a while, and I was kind of shocked at how it ends up. It got to me. This is White of the Eye, Dale. This is going to be a challenging movie to talk about, I think.
Jeez, what the fuck? What are we up against here?
But first off, I was dying to know how you came upon this movie, and you kind of inadvertently answered that by saying, oh, this is one of the directors of Performance, which is a movie we did on the show before. So it wasn't because of that. I was like, oh, he must have looked at this guy's filmography and added this. My other guess is that it has something to do with the soundtrack. Possibly, is how you found this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So one of the guys from 10cc, which, what are they saying? I'm not in love. Is that 10cc?
I'm not a big 10cc fan, but I've always meant to. Rick Fenn, I think, is his name.
So don't forget it. Not just a part of me. So one of the guys from 10cc and Nick Mason, Pink Floyd's Nick Mason, did the
royalty.
did the score to this, and I was just like floating, man. When the flashbacks were happening, I was floating on air.
Oh yeah, and the soundtrack is it's one of these they just have it playing the whole time. Like there's no silence without the score going, and it is awesome. Even if there's people talking, yapping, you got this incredible score going.
Yeah. Yes. So it had to have been, it had to go back to performance. I was looking probably at this guy's, and this guy's oeuvre, and I definitely put this movie on my potentials list, Bat and Spider potentials private list that I keep on Letterboxd. And obviously it looks like what would be like a modern day slipcover for the movie is the movie poster on Letterboxd.
Yeah. To be fair though, every poster I've seen for this just doesn't capture it, I feel like.
Yeah, I'm looking at those now, but boy, none of them. And that's it. That's it.
Okay.
Like that's all I know. It might have been mentioned in Cinema Speculation. I can't remember if he talked about that, Tarantino.
Okay.
That might be another reason why I put it on my list. Maybe, but I don't remember anything. Chuck, okay. I have a jacked up memory.
Okay. All right.
But I don't like, I'm for the most part, I loved this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until the point where I stopped loving the movie.
Yeah.
You know,
it's such, everything about it was unique. It was like, everything was done unconventionally. I feel like the way it was edited together, the way it was shot, the way the characters talked. It was really odd because it was like, it really put you in a time and place in this town in Arizona. Like it was very distinct.
Yes.
But it also felt alien the way people talked. Some people talked. And I just loved the decisions made. Like I just loved what Camel like decided to show us and tell us as this whole thing unfolded. It's such a weird mystery because it's like, it's not the satisfying, reveal that you're kind of expecting. And it kind of takes you a minute to come to grips with what's happening. And you're like, fuck, you know, because you're kind of on this guy's side the whole time. And then when it's, revealed that he's a psychopath.
Yeah. Right.
It throws you for a loop.
I think maybe that's what Art was alluding to in his review as well, but the choices made for every character is unique. The choices made just, they're like, their interplay with each other, like the way that one detective is always like kind of dancing around David Keith's character, but there's like this congeniality. Every character in this was just this level of peculiar that it's like so engaging and you can't help but just want to see more characters on screen. Like every one of them.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Everyone was, there was no character that was like everyone was so interesting. No matter how small it was, I was like, this feels like such a real person. You know, even like her one friend who with the curly hair that she like called at the end of the movie to come pick up her daughter, you know?
Yeah.
Like even her, I was like, just the little details you would give about who she was in her life and stuff. I was like, this is like a whole interesting person. Like I want to follow everyone. How about like the deputy cop who was like his good friend who like, he like comes over to like talk about what's happening in the investigation. Then he like uses the bathroom and they show him flossing.
And he uses like the wife's powder under his arms.
For his underarms. And it's just like this did, like he could have cut this out of here. Cause it's not necessarily like, I was never like, oh, this is the killer. He's the, cause he's flossing his teeth. I don't know.
Like, yeah. Right.
But it doesn't need to be in there, but it just colors him. I don't know. And, I don't know.
Yeah. I know. I can't wrap my head around either, but even more so the concentration of like the close up of his mouth and the floss, like going in and out of each tooth, like How does that fit into the grand scheme of this, you know, psychopathic murder movie, you know?
Yeah.
It's so, and the murder happens in the beginning, and then for the next, what, half hour, 40 minutes, it's just character building. There's not a murder. There's not like a huge string of murders. It's like two or three murders.
Yeah.
And I think I like that touch because it was more about the investigation and you getting introduced to all these townspeople and you kind of like maybe trying to put two and two together. And it's not about seeing this like gore shit on screen and this like, you know, like pretty creative, like the way this guy offed people. But the entire time you alluded to it earlier. The entire time David Keith does such a decent job of making you think that the killer couldn't possibly be David Keith.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you look at David Keith's face and you're like, this guy is a killer. Like any movie he's in, he's probably the bad guy. You just look at his face.
It's weird how you could like, you simultaneously think he's not the killer. But at the same time, you think back to like the way he was acting through this whole thing. And you're like, oh yeah, he wasn't concerned at all. Like he didn't seem, I never got the sense that he was like freaking out. Like, oh God, the cops think I killed somebody. I have to clear my name. Like he was so.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
Just sort of even keeled about it.
That's like, crazy in a way.
I think after you kind of see who he is for real at the end, you're like, oh, like he's just, yeah, he was out there, man. His mind was out in the clouds, apparently. And he was just wearing his human skin.
Right. Yes, exactly. Like at the end of the movie, it turns into this, like, he's like this restless spirit, like this deer spirit or this forest animal spirit. And he paints himself like ceremonially and stuff. Like it gets into the shit that I don't know if I completely can wrap my head around, other than the fact that, you know, he probably is decorated or painted like something the native people in Arizona believe in like that for sure.
They do talk about the Apaches a lot in the beginning. And I have a feeling that I think I've seen that type of makeup on Apaches in other movies probably. That's all I know about culture, but yeah, I feel like there's some Apache stuff mined for this movie. But I also think it's like, he's a psychopath. So he's like his weird speech about the black hole and
Jesus
and saying how women are the black hole. And like, God, it reminded me of, Dave Sims' anti-woman screed he did in Cerebus. It was like the exact same thing.
And it was what,
but yeah, but it's just like this maniac who's just like taking in, you know, just elements from things he sees to like make up his own logic of why he's murdering women.
She sucks everything into it. You remember? Well, if that's not female, I don't know what is.
It's female.
Yeah, female. I mean, I know the difference between male and female, and believe you me, they are different. Opposite. They are opposite. It's not like I'm hearing voices or anything. I mean, this is scientific fact. You see? The female of the species is the main reason that evolution is turning out inside out.
Was this improvised? Was this on the spot? Like, this is a... This is a Gary Busey kind of like rant, you know, but it was coming from his heart, you know what I mean? Which is crazy because like, obviously he believes in what he's saying, but you know, all about the love he has for his wife and I
it's the first time he like takes his mask off and he's like, he shows like any emotion in the whole movie.
And it's the emotion. It's like, wow, you're out there. This is like what... Everything else you've presented to us has just been bullshit this entire time. And now it's like, you're opened up now, you know? And it's like, wow, this is like a weightier dude than I could have ever contended with, you know?
When Joni, when she pukes in the toilet and then sees that string hanging out of the frame of the bathtub thing. Mm-hmm. And then she pries open the soap dish and finds the hanging body parts in there. I was still unconvinced. I was like, oh no, somebody framed his ass. The killer snuck in here and hung up body parts under his mm-hmm. tub. I was yeah. still like, there's no way it's him. Like I was like, no fucking way.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe.
I was convinced that it was somebody we haven't seen. I knew it wasn't the boyfriend.
Mike.
Yeah.
He was my only guess. It was like, I kept thinking about him, even though I was like, no, he's a total fuck up. Like he's not capable yeah. of this, but he's like the only one I could like pin any of it on. Or anyone who had motive, really.
Back to the character stuff. Like,
yeah.
Joni finds that Mike is back in the area because Mike liked it so much. And then there's like this extraneous bit that he's like letting people try his homemade peanut butter, which is fucking like, that's a choice. And it's like, yeah. it's like, I don't know. This is like from a different movie. Like this is from like Fargo or something. You know what I mean? It's like these little tiny,
yeah,
like character and, bits sprinkled in. And then there's a scene where he's feeding like the wife of the daughter in the cafe. The daughter's there at Mike's house, and that like there's a scene of so him putting the spoon of peanut butter in her mouth. What is that about? Are they seeing each other?
And then she goes like. I assume she's a minor, right? Like she was young, right? I thought.
She seemed.
Oh, that made me very uncomfortable.
What was it about?
I don't know. And they also showed that he had that truck he was working on. He had the tires. So he was like,
mm-hmm.
The only 41 people in the state had these tires or whatever.
This crazy, a crazy sponsorship, co-sponsorship by Mickey Thompson Tires. Like this, I was like, oh my God, Slim, are you listening to this? Mickey Thompson,
this is a real thing for Jeeps.
Yeah, these are like these are like Jeeper tires. These are off-roader tires and Mickey Thompson are like top of the line. Like, you know, you want a set of Mickeys on your Jeep.
Okay,
if anything.
Okay, all right. I'm not like, a big car guy, but I was lusting. After his van, especially.
Van with those tires. Amazing.
Part of me was like, fuck this murder mystery. I want to know the ins and outs of his stereo business. I wanted all the details of that. I wanted to see him going into homes and setting up stereo equipment, mm-hmm. doing his humming magic, talking to people about sound bouncing off their walls and shit.
Yep. That's how he gets the high profile clients because, you know, it's like word of mouth and shit like that. He's doing such a good job. And he's like customizing like the head yeah. units for his stereos yeah. And like putting them in cherry wood and carving ivory fucking knobs. It's like a whole thing, man. It's a whole thing. Even to this, it's 11:20 PM. I still haven't gotten over young David Keith's hairdo.
Oh,
in this
thank
movie.
Thank you. Thank you.
Like, what are we doing?
I'll tell you, I went through quite a set of emotions when I saw that hair. I was like,
I'm glad to hear.
I was like, at first I was like, yeah, what are we doing here? And then I was like, kind of into it. I was like, you know what? Mm-hmm. Like the more I saw him with those tendrils hanging off his like fro thing he had going on there.
Tendrils
is
right.
You know what? If I was Kathy Moriarty, I don't think I'd be able to resist. You know what? He is pulling that off, this guy.
Right?
he's got the mug. If anyone's going to have this hair, it's this guy. Whatever. Let's do it. Kathy Moriarty, she's incredible.
She's amazing in this movie.
I mean, talk about another
like the range of emotions.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's so hard to like, I feel like do this kind of performance where you like know the love of your life is probably cheating on you, but you're like not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then to like, when you find out, oh, it's not only is he cheating on me or he's,
yeah,
He's bagging women and stuffing them under our
bathtub. He's being unfaithful with his time so he can murder.
Yeah.
There is a moment, like whether David Keith is the murderer or not, the moment where they're banging him and Joni and they're the young versions of themselves, the younger versions, Mike comes in with the gun, but
And there's the pinball machine, the black hole pinball machine.
Oh my God. that whole sequence, dude, was like, felt the sleaze and the horniness. Like I was convinced. He says, there's this line he says, and when they're banging and, like he's alluding to, like, you got to get rid of Mike. Mike's out the door. He says, I'm the one now.
Oh my God.
And I was like ready to roll over and let him do me. Like, I was like, this is fucking like sexy.
This movie, it takes you places. Like it just wraps you up in this world.
It does. Yeah, man.
It's incredible. Yeah.
It was like, it was completely over that scene. Like he had her, whatever his like dominant like personality was in that moment, she was like in, she was given into it.
Yeah.
Like,
and she's not,
and he says, I'm the one now. And
she, her character, like, she's not like a pushover character. She's like,
exactly.
She knows what she wants and she's not, you know, but yeah. So for them to have that moment, I was like, oh my God, wow. Mm-hmm. They are intertwined, these two.
I mean, then he kneels up and he flips his hair back.
And then Mike is just, he's got his fucking gun waving it around in the dark above them. Oh my God.
Alan Rosenberg is his name in real life. He's part Italian, part Apache.
Where have we seen this guy?
He's been in a lot of stuff.
God. He just made me laugh because his face and the part he played, I thought it was so funny.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the stuff. I mean, he was in The Last Temptation of Christ, Miracle Mile, After Midnight, Witch Hunt, The Temptations, Freaky Friday.
I wonder if it's a TV show. There's something I know him from. I don't know.
Yeah, it might have been. Kojak. I just love this character. And But then you spin out, like when he starts talking to Joni, when Joni like reconnects with him, the stuff he says as a character, like he can remember the past and he can see the future. And it's like, and then at the end, it's like this, this TV that won't turn off. Like his mind is a TV that keeps playing and it won't turn off.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Like, what the hell is going on with these? Yeah. Like what's going on with these people?
Yeah. That was the only, I think that was the only like part when these two freaks meet up at the end, at the very end. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and like Mike was led there by his TV mind visions. Like, he's like, he says something like, I saw this, you know, it's something. And that was the only part I didn't like. I didn't like the idea that like, they like, I don't know, they were aware of each other on a separate plane or something. And that's why they ended up here together. I don't know. I don't know. Something about the ending. It was beautiful. I liked the way it looked visually. But I don't know. It felt schlonged there that ended a little bit.
I think you're right. Like like the final sequence I said earlier, like I loved it until I didn't love it. The final sequence is just like, I, you know, the tension was there, but everything that was coming out of everybody's mouth was just like, you lost me and you need to wrap this up.
Yeah. It's kind of hard. Cause it's like, cause of the type of movie it is. It's like, it makes me wonder if he couldn't. I mean, I think, you know, the great Albert Pune, you know, we should mention, like we did at the beginning, this is a canon movie, and it's, you would not expect to see this movie with a canon logo in front of it. But as the great Albert Pune has said many times, canon was a true director's company, and they would oftentimes let directors make the movies they wanted, you know, within reason, within the budget, you know. But I can't help but think something with this ending, I don't know, maybe Camel wasn't allowed to go as out there or finish it aesthetic, you know, in line with his vision. And, you know, maybe someone was pushing for a satisfying kill the killer, you know, ending. I don't know. I'm sure there's people who've done that research, but I don't know. I don't want to. You know, the movie is what it is. And these are the feelings we're getting.
Yeah.
Is what I'm trying to say. But
Exactly.
But it is, I think it's an incredible piece of work. I couldn't get out of my mind after watching it. Like it's, and I was shocked that we hadn't heard of this movie. Like why mm-hmm. It feels like one of those is like, why have I not encountered this movie at all? Like, how did I not know anything about this ever?
Especially like, in this weird, maybe subgenre, I don't want to say it's like folk horror, but it's like definitely, you know, there's this spiritual aspects that this whole,
with that.
The whole movie. Yeah, exactly. The whole movie is like riding on this tip of the spear. That's very spiritual and very, like this guy murders in the name of something that's beyond him. It's crazy that like I'm enamored with this movie existing. And it's like, even when we read the synopsis, I'm expecting like a slasher kind of, I'm expecting a dearth of dead bodies, and it's not, it's just like this more of a character piece in such incredible ways.
Yeah. And this line in the description, as he desperately tries to prove his innocence, like that is like that's a lie. Like he's so,
he doesn't,
he's not
anything.
Really concerned with proving. I mean, he does get a little bit, he starts to sweat a little bit when he's dragged into the police station, but
the fact that, oh my God, it's such brilliant writing. The fact that he can provide an alibi that his wife backs up, and it's that he's cheating on his wife with the woman where he's parked, but he's not really there.
Yeah.
But he's got everybody believing it because his van was parked where it was parked. Friggin' amazing.
Oh my God. I know.
He was probably just like, I'm on Easy Street now. He was probably like a made man when that broke loose in the police interrogation room.
Yeah. I'm basically a god now.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Like he's untouchable. And the sheriff of the police are like, they're all on his side and they're like talking about how this killer's got, you know, fucking rolled the wrong people coming into their hometown and shit like that. It's crazy. Man.
How about when he asks his wife after the police station, which frozen pizza she wants? The cheese one or the ooey gooey one with sausage? And then he's like, I know which one you want. And I was like, wow, that's some incredible writing there.
Yeah. And the turnaround of the next morning, I mean, he gets called out for cheating on his wife. And his wife is like just waking up and he crawls into bed next to her, happy as a clam.
That was bullshit.
And he's like, I got you a present. I'm going to go make breakfast. And then it's like a fucking stack of pots and pans.
Yeah.
Like that's her present.
I was a little mad at her because she did seem like she was being a little too smiley with him. So
yes.
Soon after.
I mean, this is 12 hours after.
But when she's staring into the reflection of those pots and pans, I was like, okay, this is more complicated.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
like she has not forgiven him. She's like, that was good.
So good. Fucking so good. Great. So good.
What a movie, Dale.
I'm so impressed with this movie.
Yeah. You did it again.
Do I want to own this on physical media?
Yeah. What's the story? Is there a disc out there of this?
The Blu-ray, the quote is, the only difference between a hunter and a killer is his prey.
It's Shout Factory.
Oh, Shout Factory. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it new?
2015 it came out.
2015, so. That's what it says. That's what it has on Amazon. Yeah. So maybe that's all it was.
It's got Interview with Alan Rosenberg, Interview with Art Evans, audio commentary by the director. By the director's biographer.
Oh,
so
cool.
He must have passed on, I'm guessing. There's deleted scenes with some commentary. Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff in here. This might be worth... Oh, it's 12 bucks. It's for sale for 12 bucks on shoutfactory.com.
Ooh, mama. I'm not in love. I'm not in love. The only, Chuck, we go through this. Yeah. Every couple movies, the world likes to remind us this, but the goldfish being murdered in front of our eyes at the beginning of this movie.
God damn it. I forgot about that.
Why can't we just have nice things?
I know. Do fish not count in the, whatever that association is in the credits where they
right.
say
no
animals were harmed? Do fish not count?
It's not fair.
That guy needed water. He needed water to breathe.
I know.
Not steak or whatever.
Yes, exactly. Like the combination of water and blood is not what this fish needs.
No.
It's awful. It was awful.
Yeah. I tell you what, though. If I was going to die for a piece of art, you'd do worse than that scene, because that was quite a scene.
Yeah, that's quite a scene. That was quite a scene.
That red splashing over that white table.
Oh, my God.
I loved all the flashbacks to like their earlier life. Like the colors were desaturated a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I loved it so much.
Oh. God. Joy. What a joy. Chuck, we got to move on.
I know.
We have to.
I know. We got to look in that mail sack. We got to uncork the bunghole of the mail sack and see what comes out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see what kind of aged tip of the bung. Chuck, you may be surprised to hear that there's nothing in the mail sack this week.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, you know, nobody loves us. It's fine.
Well, now I'm starting to sweat because...
You are not prepared to pivot right into.
And I'm looking at the calendar, Dale. Is this a leap year?
It is a leap year.
So we have another week of February, and I got to pick another love movie.
It's because.
No. Because it's the 29th next Thursday.
When did Bat and Spider first premiere? Was it a leap year? 4 years ago? Let me see.
Boy, I don't know.
I'm not alone. 2020, a leap year. The last leap year was 2020. So this is our first leap year.
Wow.
This is our first leap year because we didn't premiere until April 10th.
Dale, while I'm looking for a movie, I wanted to tell you about my Terminator Sarah Chronicles watch.
Yeah.
I finished the first season. And I got to tell you about this. The premiere episode of season 2. And it's kind of stopped me on my journey.
Man. Man.
Because they introduce a new villain, okay? And she's a tech company executive played by Shirley Manson of the band Garbage, okay?
Okay.
and she also gets they premiered a song during this episode that plays over, like, it feels like 10 minutes of the episode is this song playing over a montage. And it's Shirley Manson singing without Garbage with Bear McCurry. They're covering. I know they didn't write it, but it's basically their song, Samson and Delilah.
Oh, yeah. Wow. It's just Shirley Manson singing that?
Yeah, it's so weird. It's so weird.
It's a long song, too.
The episode ends with her, spoilers, she reveals herself to be a T-1000, and she's. One of her employees is in the men's room talking about his boss, who's Shirley Manson. He's like, oh, she really pisses me off. And he unbelts to go pee in a urinal. And then guess what? Shirley Manson is the urinal, and she forms into Shirley Manson from a urinal.
Get the fuck out of here. No.
And I was like, what? Just for that pisses me off joke? Like, it's just like, no. And then she like kills him with like a knife, you know, a finger knife that T-1000s do, you know.
She's not the urinal though.
She's
Chuck.
Liquid metal.
You just made that up.
No, this is true.
This is no.
Yeah, it's so stupid.
I'm removing this from canon, from the world canon.
The other thing, like, is like when she turned from a toilet into a human shape, the toilet was there still. Like the urinal was still there.
No.
So no, it was this, like she was just like a coating, a thin coating over.
I don't think you can remove mass, Shirley Manson.
I know.
Think
you, yeah. She needs to play by the rules.
Yeah, she really does. She really, really does.
So we'll see. I'll keep pushing along.
Just take your time after that one. You're gonna If you need a breather, I completely understand.
I've already taken a pretty long breather, actually, because that was a lot, the toilet scene.
If I had my way, I would tear this whole building down. Am I listening to the Grateful Dead all day tomorrow? I go on those spurts, Chuck.
I'm on a Ramones spurt.
Are you?
Yeah. They get their hooks into me.
I was back all last week. I was on Thin Lizzy. You'd be proud.
Ooh, nice.
God. I just love them.
They're so good.
It's because $12 is cheap for this white of the eye. Freaking four interest-free payments of $3, Chuck, with Afterpay. Fuck.
Shit.
Am I?
Might be me.
Easy Comics is back, Chuck. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
Oony.
Okay, I think I got one. I don't know if you've seen this. I hope you haven't, Dale. From 1993, My Boyfriend's Back.
Oh, wow.
Have you seen this?
My Boyfriend's Back. If I did, I saw it in 1993.
Yeah.
I remember the movie cover for this bad boy. Yeah. Wow.
Should we do it? You okay with it?
Yeah. No, let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah, My Boyfriend's Back. Wow. I haven't, I remember the trailer for this. I remember wasn't there like an imagery of like the guy in the tuxedo, his hand coming out of the grave and holding roses or something like that? That's what I remember.
Yeah, it sounds familiar. I wonder if this was on some videotape.
Yeah.
That's where we saw this.
My Boyfriend's Back. Missy McLeod is the most beautiful girl in school and Johnny Dingle has been in love with her for years. One night, Johnny is killed trying to win her over, and soon he comes back from the dead and wins Missy's heart. Beautiful. Well, love month continues.
Yeah. One more week.
That's for certain. A young Matthew Fox in this.
Oh, wow. I see Matthew McConaughey way down there.
Oh, shit. Check that out. McConaughey's in this?
Guy number two. Directed by Bob Balaban, who's a fantastic, hilarious actor.
Oh, Bob. Yeah, check out Bob Balaban. That guy.
Yeah, I didn't realize he directed as much as he had. That's another big selling point for me. I like that guy. Seems
for sure. Yeah, he's funny. Okay, wow. This is fun. Sean Cunningham produces. Wow. This is right in our wheelhouse, Chuck.
Oh, Sean Cunningham. Wow. Gee whiz. Cloris Leachman is in it. Oh, well. Ooh. Love Cloris.
Come on.
Yeah. This has got a lot. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Right?
God rest his soul.
The layers just keep unfolding.
Yeah. Well, now I'm really excited, Dale.
Tracy Lind. We saw her in class of 1999.
She was in Bugsy.
Bugsy. Wow. Okay. Well, that's it. My Boyfriend's Back. Love month continues to roll on here on Bat and Spider. Go to batandspider.com for everything you could ever need for Bat and Spider, including invite to the Discord. That's really where you want to be, you know? Also, yeah. Ko-fi. Don't forget our Ko-fi, where you can pay us and we can earn money for doing this. ko-fi.com/batandspider. We just put one in the can. It might even be out by the time you listen to this. Who knows? We had fun with that one. Hospital Massacre / X-Ray.
Yeah.
It's a hoot.
What a movie.
It's a friggin' hoot. It's a friggin' hoot. Chuck, let's get out of here. Let's boogie.
It's a hoot, Nanny. Bye, Dale.
Love you, pal.
Love you.
Love you, everyone.
Take it sleazy. Our theme song was created by Toby Forsman of Whipsong Music. Find out more at whipsongmusic.com.
This is a Tape Deck Podcast. Mm.